getting a view into the locker room that you don't normally see.
A sanitized view.
Not a natural scorer.
The honest opinion, he's not doing the job that they hired him to do.
I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Bright and early on this beautiful Saturday morning here in Winnipeg.
It's a really beautiful day outside, and what better way to spend a Saturday afternoon? This is the weather we should have got last weekend, by the way. What better way to spend a weekend than talking a little hockey with you boys?
I absolutely agree wholeheartedly. Richie, good morning. Good to see you.
Drew, good to see you as well. Nice and refreshed from your evening at the lake.
Yeah, and a very nice evening. Got to give a shout out to my buddy, Matt. Had a nice evening out at his cottage last night and drove in bright and early this morning.
Sounds like you're still in VB.
It's a little rough with the voice, but it'll loosen up as the show goes on, undoubtedly. Let's get started by looking back at last night's Game 4 between the Tampa Bay Lightning and the New York Rangers. Entering last night, Tampa Bay had a 2-1 lead, and it seemed like a lot of people were beginning to write off the New York Rangers. Tampa Bay able to get some goals past Henrik Lundqvist the last two nights.
Yeah.
And everybody sort of ignored the fact that, yeah, they got six past Lundqvist, but, you know, the Rangers got five past Ben Bishop, and I'd rather take the, you know, I think Lundqvist is going to bounce back more than Ben Bishop, and we saw it last night with the Rangers really taking it to the Tampa Bay Lightning, defeating them by a 5-1 margin.
Well, what you saw last night, Lundqvist was terrific. I mean, the save on Killorn on the breakaway, and you know, he really, I mean, he had 38 saves, so he really asserted himself, and that's the thing about Henrik Lundqvist. He's a big-time goaltender. Bishop's played very well in the playoffs as well. I do agree with your point in terms of taking Lundqvist over Bishop if you have to pick one. But it's, you know, kind of similar to when Steven Stamkos got off earlier in the playoffs. Rick Nash getting a couple, but for me, although that's probably of equal importance, is Marty St. Louis getting off. And I mean, Mark scored last night on a beautiful pass. I think it was from Derek Brassard. So he's a tremendous passer. But Mark had about four additional golden scoring opportunities. So that he's creating opportunities. He'll eventually score on a couple of them. You can see the passion in his eyes after he scored, and the Rangers had a lot of real good chances, and they were getting in off the rush really well, and Tampa Bay was turning over the puck. And then, of course, as you know, Rangers, another key, the power play. And if you're able to perform on the power play, it makes things a heck of a lot easier. So I picked the Rangers in seven in this series, and you know, if you pick it in seven, it certainly could go either way. I like their team a little bit more, but not by much. And I'm not surprised to see the Rangers win last night, as he's the desperate team. To me, these seven, I think they're both going to be seven game series, and I don't think there's ever going to be a two game gap. I think Chicago wins tonight. I'm saying, because there's not a big enough difference between the talent levels.
Yeah, you're right, Richie. After Game 3, you knew that they were going to respond. You knew that Henrik Lundqvist wasn't going to let in six goals again. And it's kind of amazing to me how the momentum swings in this series.
Yeah.
And it you look at the series and you'd say it's tied 2-2, and all the games have been close. And, you know, Game 3 was close, obviously. But games 2 and 4 certainly weren't. And, you know, yesterday's game, Tampa Bay, you know, Richie mentioned the power play and the way the Tampa Bay Lightning, they had some chances early in the second period. They were pretty solid, but Lundqvist was what you'd expect him to be and didn't give them much and made some incredible saves. And Ben Bishop didn't have his best game. And I realized, you know, there was a couple deflections. And, you know, Richie mentioned the first goal certainly was a beautiful goal by Rick Nash. That's what Alain Vigneault hopes to see out of Rick Nash. That's the Rick Nash that made the Canadian Olympic team. I mean, that's the Rick Nash that scored 42 goals this year, and he hasn't been doing that enough. Everyone, you know, it's funny, we sit back and watch Rick Nash, and everybody seems to have the answer why he doesn't do it. And you watch him, and you kind of wonder to yourself, you know, why isn't he been doing that more? Because he hasn't been, you know, at his best for a lot of the playoffs. But I think this Tampa Bay Lightning team right now is in a way, they almost got away with how they played defensively, especially in Game 3. They didn't play very well defensively in Game 3. And, you know, I think
scoring six goals covers a lot of warts, but giving up five is problematic.
Yeah, and, you know, Matt Carl missed the game yesterday, but I've had an issue with the way Carl and Schuster have been playing on that bottom pair. I think, Richie, the Rangers have been exposing that pair especially. I think Strahlman and Hedman have been fine as the top pair, but I think that, you know, you mentioned
Garrison had a brutal turnover yesterday, too.
Yeah, and he's been good. Yep. Garrison's been pretty solid throughout the playoffs, but, you know, this is a situation here where we're exactly where we thought we'd be, you know, going to, Rich mentioned, you know, seven games. It's a best of three now.
And, you know, you listen to John Cooper talk, and John Cooper's always interesting in that I think he always talks about a different game than I've watched. He always says, oh, you know, I think it was the first game. I thought the Rangers were outplayed Tampa Bay, and after the game he said, you know, that's the couple of bad those are the breaks of the game. And I was like, oh, what game are you watching? So, I mean, he's a spin master, John Cooper. And I think probably to the benefit of his team, he never, you know, gives the other team too much credit unless he feels it's necessary to motivate his squad. You know, you're going back 2-2, and if you're Tampa Bay, I mean, both these teams are probably pretty comfortable in the spot they are, and it's not as if Tampa didn't get chances last night. I mean, they're top two, you know, they're top heavy for sure, and it would help if guys like Callahan could get going a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I know Callahan seemingly we were traded for each other, but there's an offensive talent gap there, and it'll be interesting to see if New York can limit this top two lines. Can some guys on Tampa Bay, you know, can somebody other than Palat, Johnson, Kucherov, Stamkos contribute, or Killorn too, contribute enough offensively? Because you're going to need a goal or two from one of those guys, some of those guys in the next three games. And I think it'll be three games.
Let me ask you this. I mean, you know, coming into last night, you know, all the talk was Lundqvist. He's been struggling. Six goals against. Sure. Tampa's got his number. Now you look at Ben Bishop's numbers the last two games, and they're pretty terrible. I mean, five goals against last night.
Two games, though, Drew, right?
It's only two games, but I mean, you know Henrik Lundqvist is going to be able to snap out of it. I think you have more confidence in that he'll snap out of it quicker than necessarily Ben Bishop when he's been struggling.
Well, you do because you know Henrik Lundqvist has won an Olympic gold medal. He's been in big games before.
Mm-hmm.
Does it mean that he's, you know, unbeatable? No, but I do agree, Drew, that you know you haven't seen Bishop on this stage before, so it's the unknown of that. And there are times, Ezzy, that he looks really solid, and I mean, then there are times that he catches a puck with his glove against Montreal two times in the series, and the puck goes in. You know, Lundqvist, I think, they have such different styles. I find that really interesting. Lundqvist sits back in his net and is, you know, completely a reflex kind of guy, kind of like Curtis Joseph used to be, but better at it, really. And then you see Bishop is a big guy, takes away a lot of space, makes you pick spots. But Bishop, you know, they'll have games where he completely is calm and have games where he completely fights the puck at all times. So yesterday they had a lot of chances, too, but yesterday wasn't his finest performance, and I know the game before, too, you could take issue with it. And, of course, Lundqvist letting in the goal from Kucherov in overtime was a terrible goal. I mean, you can't let that goal in. So I think Lundqvist has a slight edge there, but I don't think it's a massive gap.
Like you said, a back-and-forth even series as we expected at the start, and now it's down to a best-of-three. The first team to win two games goes to the Stanley Cup Finals.
Yeah, Drew, you mentioned Bishop. He's let in 10 goals in the last two games. He hasn't been good. I don't think every single goal was his fault yesterday, but he wasn't good. And I think it really becomes apparent that Lundqvist is a better goaltender in a game where Stamkos brings them back into the game, and you know that Lundqvist isn't giving you much, and Bishop, you know, he lets in a deflection goal, the Kreider goal, and, you know, he isn't able to really recover. And then, you know, he doesn't make the saves in the third period, pardon me. But, you know, I like Ben Bishop. I think, you know, Richie mentioned he struggled at times in the Montreal series. You could tell a couple of the goals, you know, the glove hand goals, Pacioretty. But he's always responded, but he has to be better. There's no other. It's pretty simple. He just has to be better because Lundqvist, you know, he's not going to have. I mean, Tampa Bay's. This is the best offensive team in the NHL, and you know that's why they're here right now. They're not a defensive juggernaut. I mean, they have their warts on defense. Ben Bishop is certainly, no offense to him, but he's not a top five goaltender in the NHL. I mean, you're talking about Stamkos and Johnson and Palat and Kucherov, all these guys. I mean, this team. We saw this team explode against the Habs and you know they've done this in the games two and three, so I mean Lundqvist is not going to probably let that happen again. They're going to get their goals, but I think Bishop's got to respond. And, you know, Richie mentions, I picked the Lightning to win the series, but right now I'm not that confident, because even in a game when the Rangers were badly outshot, especially in the second period, they're badly outplayed, they still got the win because Lundqvist is the difference and he can steal the game. So, you know, this Rangers team, they always find a way to bounce back. And right now it's so close. It's tough to know who right now it's tough to know like who has the momentum in the series. I don't. It's probably the Rangers.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's tough to tell, as you know.
Or look, you know, you're like, it's tough to Richie to look for who has the edge. I don't think there is an edge right now.
I mean, yeah, that, you know, the home ice obviously an MSG, and that crowd is a factor. Certainly a more, to me, an impactful crowd than the Tampa Bay crowd.
The Tampa Bay crowd is half Rangers fans.
Yeah, well, that's also true. Tampa Bay and Rangers, 262, 252 goals for this year. First and third teams overall in the National Hockey League in scoring goals. I like to see this. This is nice to see some fast-paced scoring chance games. And, you know, you're seeing kind of, to me, yesterday you kind of saw, and especially yesterday, I think, you saw why the Rangers go out and add a guy like Keith Yandle. He moves the puck real nice. Hey, move the puck real nice in the power play, kind of, you know, staying within himself for the most part. And obviously, defensively, is his game, I'd say, needs work, but he is what he is at this point. But boy, you know, it certainly helped him moving the puck off the back end and on the power play. The guy like that, he played well. So I like to see this fast pace. It could go either way here. And if you get Nash going and you got Stamkos going, and you got, and if Bishop feels like he has to come back, which obviously he's going to, against a guy like Lundqvist, you're going to see some. You know, you're going to see, I think, the two best teams in the conference.
Yeah,
just definitely. Go at it here for the next three games. It's great to watch.
Sure.
It's very odd, though, thinking about it. Like, I didn't think this series would be all 2-1 games. Like, I thought the Rangers and Washington would be. But it's kind of weird to see this series being so high-scoring. The other series.
Yeah, you thought the West was going to be the highest-scoring series. We'll talk about the Western Conference. But, I mean, the Ducks' defense and what they've been able to do to really clamp down on Chicago has been very impressive.
And I think, Drew, that's a good point. And, you know, just to end the thought on the Lightning and the Rangers, I think as the series progresses, the last three games here, the Martin St. Louis playing his old team, and he's becoming a UFA, right? We don't know if St. Louis is coming back to the Rangers. There's a good chance he does. But that whole storyline, Callahan used to be the captain of the Rangers, playing his old team. That storyline, you haven't seen that as much. You know, Callahan hasn't been as impactful as St. Louis has, but I think you'll start to see that a little bit. The Lightning haven't been here since 2004, right? The Rangers were there last year, but this Lightning team, they're trying to take that next step. The Rangers right now, I mean, they're the team to beat in the East.
I would agree with that comment.
Well, I mean, I
they're the beast of the East.
I don't know. I think both these teams expect to be on this run for a while. I don't see, like, the Rangers aren't old.
No, I don't. You're talking about
Don't start that window closing.
Well, I just think both these teams. I don't think both these teams think this is it.
No, I agree with you.
I think the Rangers think this is it more than Tampa, but really, neither of them do. Because you look at the core of these squads here. Look up the middle, okay? Broussard, Stepan, and Kevin Hayes was back in the middle yesterday. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty good young threesome there. And then you have obviously Stamkos moving to the wing, Stamkos, but you have Stamkos and Johnson. I mean, let's be honest here. I mean, these guys aren't going anywhere. Hedman, McDonough.
There's going to be a lot of
maybe
these two teams should be atop the East for the next number of years.
You think so? And they're both miss the playoffs next year.
Yeah, you never know in this day and age in the NHL. Yeah. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about Mike Babcock. He's got a new coaching job in Toronto.
Who's that?
In case you missed that one,
they go to Buffalo.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. It's 9:20 a.m. Beautiful Saturday morning here in Winnipeg. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com.
Great musical choice by Rory right there. Love it. Mike Babcock.
Yeah.
When I saw that he signed, I honestly heard 15. I thought it was 3 years, 15. And then
you got that a bit wrong.
It's 5050.
Yeah, and it's eight years.
That's a lot of money.
8 years, $50 million to be the new head coach, the new savior, the new god of Toronto. All hail King Babcock.
I knew Drew would come in with one of those.
But, you know, it's sort of two parts. One, how surprised are you? Let's start with how surprised are you that he chose Toronto at the end after all the suitors and everything else?
I'm surprised. Okay, well, let me go back to a couple weeks ago. I don't know what happened. I haven't really been able to, I know, based on reading and listening to things, haven't been able to figure out why there was no match in Edmonton. That's the first thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm qualifying by saying I don't know why that's not an option.
Why it never was an option.
Yeah, and I don't know why. Which is the one side or the other? Because that didn't make any sense to me. Taking Edmonton out of the picture, which I thought was the best fit, and the best job, frankly. Then you're looking at Buffalo, which I think is a better job than Toronto. Mm-hmm. Less pressure, more talent. You got Pegula spending a ton of money, which MLSE does. You can do it with less, as I just said, less pressure. And you have Jack Eichel, Sam Reinhart, young players like Kane and Bogosian. You got Zadorov, and you have Ristolainen, and you know, Gergensen. So you got some pieces up front, especially. And the Leafs have Riley on the back end, who I think is a great player. Gardner, who I think is overrated but useful. But they don't have Eichel. I know they have Nylander, but they don't have Eichel. Yeah. And boy, he looked good in the World Championships in this brief time I saw him play. To see him more, of course. So that, okay, you know, that makes sense. And there was rumors, guys, that Buffalo offered him 10 years. Okay? Maybe even more money. So, taking into account, really, the Sharks were a non-starter to me. Philly, we'll talk about later, obviously wasn't interested, and great for Dave Hextall to get a gig there. St. Louis with Hitchcock, that just seemed dirty, really, because Babcock and Hitchcock coaching together, Armstrong, and that just seemed, yeah, didn't make sense to me. So Chicago rumors were ridiculous. So
they're still in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, just Quinville and Bowman.
Quinville's got two
Stanley
Cups.
Well, Quinville and Bowman clearly don't get along. Yep. But still, I mean, Quinville's done a great job. So if you're taking those two squads, I'm surprised. I am. I'm surprised that he would choose Toronto because, well, the upside is being a savior in that city and really in Canada for a lot of the Leafs fans and all the attention you get. There's also a lot of downside, and maybe it's that exact challenge that he wanted more than anything else. But if the Detroit job was there, and Ken Holland said this, Ken Holland said they offered him 5 years at the end, but nowhere near the amount of money. So I'm thinking about 3.5, which would have made him the most highly paid coach in the league. So that money and term were not even close to what Toronto offered. So if you take Detroit out of the picture, I think that's the best job of the three. Then again, I'm surprised he didn't go to Buffalo, but I'm not shocked that Toronto wasn't an option. Oh, Toronto was the pick, excuse me.
Yeah, Richie, and Toronto was always a potential landing spot for Mike Babcock, but the way things played out, as you said, kind of towards the end of the season or after the Red Wings got knocked out of the playoffs, it kind of looked like, okay, is he going to stay in Detroit or maybe go to one of Edmonton or Philadelphia or Buffalo? It was kind of those four teams, like you said, right? And then, you know, you could. I agree with you, San Jose, all these other. I mean, yeah, he wasn't going to go to 12 different teams. It was really probably three or four teams that were really seriously going to be a potential new spot for him. Or in Detroit's case, you know, he would stay in Detroit. But I'm not surprised, Drew, because Toronto offered him the most money, and Toronto was, I knew with the, you know, Mike Babcock did coach Brendan Shanahan for 1 year in Detroit, and the belief was always, I think that especially, you know, you had Peter Horacek, interim head coach. He was let go right after the season ended. I always thought because it was Toronto, even, you know, all of this talk about, you know, it's a media market and the Toronto Maple Leafs are a rebuilding team, I still think, and I know I've argued with Richie about this, you know, we've argued politely about it. I still think a lot of coaches will want to take that job. And I'm not disagreeing, Richie, that the Leafs are they're a mess. They're still a mess. But when you hire Mike Babcock, all of a sudden it becomes quite less of a mess,
yeah,
if you want to say
that. The number of saviors that have gone through Toronto. Remember, Brian Burke was supposed to be a savior when they hired him, and he was supposed to lead them to the promised land. And 5 years later, they're way worse off than they were before his reign in Toronto.
Yeah. And you know, you look
I think Mike Babcock's a very good coach, but I mean,
I think he's the best coach in the league.
I know you do. And you look at if this was strictly about winning games next year and the year after and, you know, 2 years down the road and everything else, he doesn't take this job. I think it's a function of the upfront money, the front-loaded nature of the of his contract, and that supposedly he's getting $16 million over the first two seasons.
It's guaranteed anyway, so.
I know it's guaranteed, yeah. But I mean, you know, that if, you know, they're getting, you know, $16 million right up front.
Fair enough.
And two, I think it has to do, I think his family said we prefer Toronto to Buffalo.
That seems to have been a factor, Drew. We're not sure.
I'm just reading the tea leaves and making
that
assessment.
Well, his family's his wife because his kids aren't living there, right?
Right.
Now.
So his wife would say, you know, honey, I'd rather live in downtown Toronto, you know, a stone's throw from Air Canada Center and everything else, than live in Buffalo.
It's all fine and dandy until they go on a 5-game losing streak.
Right, yeah. Richie,
they can't leave their condo because everybody would be screaming at them.
Yeah, and you can't ignore the amount of money. But then, as Richie mentioned, you hear that the Sabres were going to offer him a very similar amount of money. So mm-hmm. I think Mike Babcock, the family aspect, I think, is important. I think sometimes, Drew, that gets lost. I think when, you know, where a player is going to sign, I think, yeah, their wives and significant others, family, that does play into it. But for the purposes of this, Richie, we just don't know. At least I haven't heard that was a primary reason. But I think, you know, Richie, why Mike Babcock ultimately chose Toronto, and it wasn't just the money. I think he does like the challenge.
Absolutely.
And again, you know, sure, he's getting paid a ridiculous amount of money. That was part of it. But I think he looks at Toronto and he sees Brendan Shanahan, and even though Brendan Shanahan is a new president of hockey operations, meaning that before that he was with the NHL and he doesn't have as much experience, he knows what Brendan Shanahan did on the ice. He likes
what does
he
that
sees
mean,
there.
Though? I mean, you know,
no, but I'm just saying. I think he liked the fit there maybe more than with Tim Murray.
Maybe, but he knows Murray from Anaheim.
He does, but yeah. Like I think that these things factor in heavily too. It's not just, you know. They gave me more years and more money. I think, you know, Buffalo, as you mentioned, a lot of good young players. They're going to get Jack Eichel.
Buffalo's
appealing too.
I said, like, why would he go there? I said that the past couple weeks. Why would he go there? So I'm surprised he went there.
Buffalo's getting the draft next year. There's a lot. There's the new Harbor facility. Center. I mean, there's a lot of things going on in Buffalo.
Yeah.
Buffalo's on the up and up here.
This decision is about two things. Money and ego. And I'm not saying ego
In a negative sense.
Yeah. I'm saying he wants to prove, and as to Tazzy's point before, he wants the challenge of proving he can be the guy who, where so many have failed before him.
Sure.
Although it'd be funny once he's, if they're in sixth place in December next year in the Eastern Conference where Randy Carlyle was and he got fired and Babcock will be a savior and Carlyle was a complete moron. You know, with all the shots for all that stuff. But the point is like he's going to get a lot more rope than some of the other guys because of his name, and he's earned that. He's earned a lot of rope. But it's about those two things. So he's not going to Toronto for 8 years, $3 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
And if they offered him a ton of money and it didn't have the prestige, he probably wouldn't be there either.
Well, and that's what Toronto has, that Buffalo. I mean, exactly. Buffalo, if the money's the same, the talent in Buffalo is better, but the prestige of being the guy who leads
exactly
the Toronto Maple Leafs to the promised land.
Buffalo has money, no prestige. Detroit has prestige, not as much money.
Mm-hmm.
Toronto has prestige, the ability to have prestige, and money.
That's right. And probably more prestige than almost any other team in the league, given the years and decades of struggles. So, I mean, sure, Montreal, I mean, that was also, the, you know, maybe he'll go to Montreal. That was silly. I didn't quite understand that at all either.
Well, I mean, from, you know, went to school at McGill and all that stuff was a connection. But again, Drew, you know, as much as you want to see it, I mean, Brendan Shanahan can this is the thing I don't think has been talked about enough. We talked about it on the show before. Ken Holland was offering Mike Babcock, I think, a little bit more than what he was earning, I believe. I'm not sure exactly what Ken Holland's earning, but it's in probably the ballpark of 3.5, 3, 2.5, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we spoke on the show before. I think we asked guests, but also rhetorically, you know, how would he feel, Ken Holland, if he's getting the coach, the guy who, you know, he's the boss, getting paid more than he is?
Sure.
It's like we said, mentioned Costanza and
his secretary.
Yeah,
secretary
raise. But yeah, you know, it makes an awkward dynamic. In this case, Toronto doesn't have a GM. So it doesn't matter if he's making that much money because there's no GM anyways. Now there's going to suddenly be a GM, which we haven't even talked about, is a very odd arrangement.
Well,
is Dubas running the team? Is Hunter running the team? Are they both running different parts of the team?
Is
That's all fine and dandy, but when you're at the trade deadline, you're trying to make a call. Who's making that decision? And if one guy's making one, you're not going to think exactly the same way, and your vision for the team won't be exactly the same. There's a reason that the structure didn't work with Les Jackson and Brett Hall in Dallas. I mean, it just doesn't work.
Well,
so what's going to happen there? Now you got to drop a GM in that team
with those personalities and the coach making $6 million, I mean, there's a lot of dynamics here people haven't discussed at length.
Yeah. And remember, if you remember back when Ken Dryden took over the Toronto Maple Leafs as president, he also was going to hire the best general manager in hockey, and it took him about a year and a half to hire him, and he ended up hiring John Ferguson Jr. So, I mean, there's historical precedent.
But didn't Dryden hire Quinn before first? Yeah, Mike Smith and then Quinn.
They had like eight guys. Where yeah. There was nobody. There was associate general managers, and there was a mess.
Yeah.
You can only go so far without having a clear power structure before at some point in time it just dissolves into people butting heads and a clash of conflict. Heading to break, let's play the clip from Mike Babcock talking about building a proud winning team yeah. in Toronto. When we come back, Michael Trakos of the National Post is going to join us, talk more about the hiring of Mike Babcock.
Well, I never came here to make the playoffs. I came here to be involved in a cup process, and that goes from scouting, from drafting, from development, from analytics, from putting an off-ice team together, an on-ice team together. So I love to win. I have a burning desire to win. But I also want to win in the end. I don't want to just get in the playoffs. I want to win. I want to be here with these guys. We want to build a team off the ice and on the ice that the fans of the Toronto Maple Leafs can be proud of. We have to create an environment that's safe for players. And what I mean by that is when you win every day, it becomes pretty safe for the players. Right now, it's a hard spot. It's tough. We're going to change that, but it's going to take time. As a coach, you're in the day-to-day winning business. You understand it. I've been in a long time. On game day, I'll be short-sighted for sure, but I got a big picture in mind. So does Shanny. So does Larry. So do the people on our staff, and that's where we're going. But if you think there is no pain coming, there's pain coming.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mindell alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show our very good friend from the National Post, Michael Trakos. Michael, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, guys. It's been long overdue.
Yes, it has, good friend. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you guys holding up today?
We're doing well, thank you. Take us to the scene in Toronto. Are people, you know, are they still, you know, praying at the altar of Babcock, or they already think he should be run out of town on the next rail?
I'm actually in Tampa for the Eastern Conference Final, but it's funny that you mentioned that because I'm sure all the players' phones blew up the day that Babcock decided to choose Toronto. Well, my phone was blowing up as well, just with like friends, family members, and just even people I hadn't heard of or heard from in a long time. Just going, what's the deal here? Is this for real, or is this Toronto finally making appropriate hires and turning a franchise that's been kind of a butt of a joke for the last several years and maybe even 10 years? It seems like he added some definite legitimacy. And you know what? I'll preface that by saying we've seen this before. Definitely Brian Burke brought in a whole lot of hope, saying that schools are going to be named after the guy that brought a Stanley Cup to Toronto, and he hoped to be that guy. And when Randy Carlyle came with his Stanley Cup resume, there was a lot of hope, and same thing with Ron Wilson. And you can even go back to the goaltending coach of Francois Allaire, who had worked with Patrick Waugh and Galov and Jaguar and was promising to turn around Toronto's goaltending. And none of those guys really worked out. But with Babcock and just with the team that Shanahan has put into place and the kind of slow, methodical moves that he's been making, I think there is a belief system there where you're going, okay, they're not promising the world in 10 days. They're saying it's going to take a long time. There's pain. But it finally seems like they have a plan and that they're willing to stick to that plan. So I think if you're a Leaf fan, that's something to hold on to.
You know, Michael, there's obviously 50 million reasons why Mike Babcock chose Toronto, and he answered these questions and said
I wonder what those reasons are.
one of the reasons he mentioned was that he wanted a new challenge. Do you think that's really it, that he sees the Toronto Maple Leafs as a challenge, and how much do you think it has to do with ego?
Yeah, you know what? I think a big part of the reason why he chose Toronto is a big reason why people don't like Toronto who live in other parts of the country. And the idea that Toronto is the center of the hockey universe, I think, played a huge role in this decision. I think even bigger than money, if we're to believe that Buffalo was actually offering more dollars and possibly more term to Babcock. I think there's an appeal there. If you're willing, if you've got the stomach and you're willing to take on that pressure, winning in Toronto provides you with a legacy that I don't think any other city in the National Hockey League can provide you. And Mike Babcock's worked with one original six team already, and to go from Detroit to Toronto, he said, is basically a dream. And like I mentioned with Brian Burke's comments about they built schools after the guys that win Stanley Cups in Toronto, I don't think that's hyperbole at all. I think if Mike Babcock manages to succeed where Pat Quinn, Pat Burns, Ron Wilson, Randy Carlyle, a lot of great, great coaches failed, Roger Nielsen even, if he manages to find success and bring a Stanley Cup to Toronto, well, his legacy is up there with the greats. He might be the greatest coach of all time in the NHL in a lot of people's minds. However, the flip side of that is, if he fails where everyone else has failed, well, does that tarnish his legacy? And does that tarnish a reputation that seemed as good as gold right now? And Mike Babcock is willing to embrace that challenge. So good on him. And I can see where, aside from the money, where there would be sort of a desire to work in Toronto.
You know, Michael, when you hear Babcock's press conference, he talks about winning makes it more comfortable for the players. And if you talk to people in the game, you hear that Mike Babcock might not be the most well-liked guy in his dressing room, you know, from his own players, but he's very well-respected. How long do you see that, you know, you hear about Phaneuf and Kessel, even if they're both there, you guys like that, you know, eager to kind of jump on board. How long do you think that honeymoon lasts between Babcock and the players?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I don't even know if either of those players, Phaneuf and Kessel, are going to be here mm-hmm. for Mike Babcock's first game. I think there's a good chance that one or both of them gets traded in the summer. But if they are around, I think Babcock definitely has a respect factor. And I don't think he's going to be – like he mentioned today that there's some good players in that dressing room, and there's some players that are basically – he didn't say open words in his mouth, but basically poison. And I think the challenge right now for him and the rest of the lease management is to identify, if they don't know who they already are, identify who those guys are who are the poison, because I've seen it where it's not just one guy skipping practice or leaving practice early. It's a trickle-down effect where one guy leaves and next day two guys leaves, and then before you know it, no one's putting in that extra work. No one seems to care for one another in that dressing room, and it just has a poisonous effect in the entire locker room. So I think his challenge right now is just to kind of identify which guys you're going to build around. And it doesn't have to be just the young guys that you're building around. I'm talking about which veterans you want to keep around that are going to be setting a template for when you've got a William Nylander or if it's a Dylan Strome or a Noah Hanifin that gets drafted this summer. When those guys come into the dressing room, it's similar to what Babcock had in Detroit, where Datsyuk and Zetterberg and even Lidstrom before them set down the groundwork where it's now become the Detroit way. Well, I think you have to create the Toronto way. I think that's his first kind of order of business.
You mentioned that, you know, Detroit way versus Toronto way, and the flip side of, and Babcock's a great coach. Like, I'm not, I think it's the best coach in the league, frankly, but you look at the success he's had on the flip side, if you want to play devil's advocate, the success he's had in Detroit, and then of course with the Olympic team, even Anaheim before, but more so Detroit the last 10 years, and the Olympic team, his number one two centers are, you know, Crosby and Taves on the Olympic team, and on Detroit, Datsyuk and Zetterberg for the most part. No players on Toronto, especially up the middle, resemble those players. So, you know, how is he going to deal with that the fact that he doesn't have that kind of talent, especially up the middle?
Yeah, I fancy myself as a guy who can debate an argument. I'm not going to try to debate that one. There's no way I'm going to put a Tyler Bozak or a Nazem Kadri in that conversation. Yeah, yeah. And you're perfectly right. And Babcock's inheriting a team here that has more than one problem. And, yeah, it starts up the middle. It goes on defense. It it goes to secondary scoring, it goes to leadership, it goes special teams. It's basically everywhere you look, there's a fire to put out in terms of roster needs. But he's got the term. He's got the term to kind of wait it out. And I think the first few years are going to be about just accumulating picks and prospects. And I think that's where a guy like Mark Hunter is going to earn his pay. You talk to people, not just in junior hockey circles, but in just overall NHL hockey circles. And this guy has got an eye for talent. And he's also one of those guys that has embraced analytics. So it's not just about he's a talent scout who can see a guy one night and say, oh, that guy's going to make the NHL. Well, no, he does his homework, and he doesn't miss a whole lot. You look at the players that London has had over the years, from Corey Perry to John Tavares to Patrick Kane to even Nazem Kadri, who was a fantastic junior player, a top pick in the NHL. A lot of them, all those guys have passed through Mark Hunter in that London system. So I think the challenge now for the Leafs is just kind of make sure you do well on those draft picks that you have in this year's draft. And if you are moving a Kessel enough, that you're getting the right prospects back, because no doubt what Detroit was so good at doing that every other NHL team would love to replicate is finding not just first-round picks, but those guys in the fourth and fifth and sixth and seventh round who turn into the Datsyuks and the Zetterbergs and the Lidstroms.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Michael Trakos of the National Post. And, Michael, you mentioned sort of a number of the Leafs management group, and you look at Babcock's time in Detroit, and I think part of the success is there was a clear hierarchy. Ken Holland was the general manager. He was the boss. He was responsible for the player personnel. Babcock was the coach. You know, obviously had some input into the players. You look at now what he's going into in Toronto. He's certainly the coach. But in terms of player personnel, there's just a mess of people supposedly making decisions. Aren't the Leafs almost setting him up to fail to some extent, given that there's so many cooks in the player personnel kitchen in Toronto?
Yeah, it's an interesting organizational structure that they're kind of forming here. And I don't know if there is a template that they're necessarily following. Like you mentioned, I think you got Shanahan at the top, but and you got Babcock at the bottom as the head coach. But in between there, I think the flow chart doesn't necessarily go up or down. It moves sort of laterally, and you're going to have a lot of people with hands on the steering wheel, so to speak. Is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? Well, when you look at the people whose hands are on the wheel, none of them have big egos. None of them are coming from positions where they've done this before with another team. There's literally no one with previous NHL managerial experience on the Leafs management team. That is if you don't include Cliff Letcher, who is basically there in a Scotty Bowman-type figurehead role. So I think that's what's going for it, is that they all are coming into this sort of new, and they all bring a completely different skill set. Like when you look at Kyle Dubas, who they plucked at a junior hockey from the Sioux. He's a guy that has been a proponent from day one of analytics. So you know where he kind of stands in terms of his role, and he's built an analytics team there. Well, Mark Hunter is going to be your player development and director of development type managerial guy who's going to oversee the scouting side. And I think when you look at another guy, Brandon Pridham, he's your capologist, and he's also going to have some input over which guys they should pick. And then you got Babcock and Shanahan trying to figure out which guys are going to work and which guys aren't going to work on the roster. So I think a lot of them bring complementary skill sets to one another. And like I said, I don't see, aside from Mike Babcock, who's obviously got probably the biggest resume of that team, I don't see a whole lot of ego or a whole lot of guys saying, hey, I want to do it my way. I think you would have had that had the Leafs brought in a Peter Chiarelli or a player or a GM of that ilk. But there isn't that guy on that team. Like I said, there are all a lot of guys who are green who kind of want to work together. And I think that's the key. If they can work together, this could possibly work. But, yeah, it could also go the other way.
Michael, Brendan Shanahan earlier this week said that he had talks with Guy Boucher, and apparently they were pretty close to hiring Guy Boucher. And you hear Ray Shiro in New Jersey has also talked to Guy Boucher. He seems to be kind of the you know, the head coach of the moment right now. And I saw you tweeted this earlier this week, too, that, you know, they should bring him on as assistant along with Paul McLean, who apparently was offered the interim head coach position after he was fired by Ottawa. I guess two-part right. question. Who do you think do you think those two are, would be – I know it's probably not going to happen. Both of those guys are assistants. But who do you think would be a really good assistant or assistants for Mike Babcock? And when do you think he's going to make that decision?
Yeah, that's a good question. And yeah, I don't know who Babcock would like to have on as his assistant. I'll just say it from a Guy Boucher or a Paul McLean standpoint. And a lot of people said, well, why would those guys want to work as an assistant coach, considering that they've already been head coaches and to a degree successful head coaches in the NHL? And my answer has always been because it's Toronto. And right. the assistant coach in Toronto is probably, in some markets, he's getting paid more than the head coach on some teams in the NHL, or at least it's comparable. And
seems to be working for Scott Ardeal right now in New York.
Yeah, and I was going to say that the opportunity you get as well, it's just incredible. I think more eyes are on you, and if you're looking at a sort of stepping stone. But, you know, I don't know which guys Babcock is bringing on. I know he brought on, he was bringing with him his special teams guy from Detroit. I can't remember the name now.
Jim Miller.
Yeah, so he's coming with them. But do they have to get a name guy like a Boucher or a McLean? I don't necessarily think so. I don't think a lot of people would care if the Leafs go with someone they haven't heard of as an assistant. But I think a Boucher could be an interesting fit just because I sort of like the way he thinks the game. It's completely unorthodox. And coming from coaching in the Swiss League, I'm sure he's got even more ideas.
Maybe Torts can come in to Toronto.
Yeah. There you go.
Michael, let you go on this last question here. And you look at the, we were talking before you came on, the money factor here. You know, he gets paid a 6.25 a year, and he gets paid a bunch of money up front, but it's guaranteed in any event. How much of a factor is it that, like, there isn't a guy, and we kind of spoke about it earlier in the interview, but there isn't a guy like Ken Holland, or there isn't a guy above him that's maybe more powerful in theory, by making less money? In this case, there isn't actually a formal general manager. You mentioned the guys above him are green to the National Hockey League, and Shanahan, well, like president of hockey operations, is also green to that role. Does that allow Babcock to maybe have more power and allow them to pay him that much money and kind of establish a different power structure?
Yeah, and I think that's part of the reason why they probably felt comfortable giving them the money, and frankly, is the fact that they're going to get more than just a typical, quote-unquote, head coach for this role. I think they want him to have input in the roster, and why wouldn't you? He's a guy that's going to be with the team for basically the next decade, who's getting paid this much, and you think so highly of, well, let's make sure you get him the players that he wants, and you're not just throwing him a bunch of guys and saying, all right, Babs, make him fit. I think that's a problem in some markets, and I know a lot of people say, well, you can't give the coach too much control because he might be gone. Well, Babcock's not going anywhere. So get him involved in the input process. He'll know which guys work, which guys don't, and kind of go from there. And it is a kind of a slippery slope, I guess, so to speak. But this could be the new NHL. This could be the way that we're seeing things. And don't be surprised if other coaches, whether it's a Quenneville or a Sutter, assume similar type roles in the future wherever they land.
One last thing, Michael, and we want to congratulate you on the new gig.
All right, thanks, guys. You guys have always been great supporters of me, so I really appreciate it.
And you know, for the first your first difficult task, they sent you to Tampa Bay to cover hockey.
Yeah, it's I can think of worse places to be right now.
Yeah, Mike, appreciate the time as always this morning, and thanks very much for doing it.
All right, guys. Pleasure, and we'll talk soon.
Yeah, we'll talk to you soon, Mike. Take care. It's Michael Tracos of the National Post joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here
Michael's
on TSN
the best.
1290.
He doesn't take us seriously at all, and I love it.
That's perfect. Exactly.
That's why I like him.
That's exactly what he's supposed to do. Let's just keep rolling right into the next segment here on the program. It's brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey, conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination location for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Are we raising money for like a charity here? There's no commercial show?
It's a commercial-free show right now, so we'll just keep going. Last week, it was a mic-free show in that we didn't have microphones for a lot of it. So this week, it's a commercial-free show for a little while.
This is like earlier in the Chicago-Anaheim series when Nicholas Jarmelson couldn't get off the ice. Remember they kept icing it? He couldn't get off, and he almost collapsed. We're just going to go right through for the next 2 hours. You know, on the topic of Bernstein's Deli, you know, last week after the show, we went there, and we, you know, if you follow me on Instagram or Twitter, we have a contender for the new Illegal Curve sandwich.
The
sandwich has been in the works now for 2 years, and I know Gary Lawless is really looking forward to it, but this sandwich, the chicken schnitzel sandwich with bacon and onions and mushrooms. I think we have a contender here. We're going to have to do, you know, we'll do our on-air.
We'll do a summer of research, undoubtedly, and we'll go from there. Boston, they've hired a new general manager, Don Sweeney, named to replace Peter Chiarelli.
Number 32,
that's right. Sweeney, of course, has been in the Bruins organization for, well, forever as a player and then sort of in the front office role. You know, I'm still not 100% sure why they fired Chiarelli in the first place. And, you know, can you make an argument? I mean, it's hard to make the argument based on track record that Don Sweeney is an upgrade of a general manager over over Peter Chiarelli.
Well, we don't know because we don't know anything about Don Sweeney, Drew. So it's hard to say. I don't know. I do think Peter Chiarelli is a good GM. And I do agree with you. I don't think he should have been fired. I know, obviously, he gets the brunt of the heat he takes the most is for the Sagan trade. And we don't know what was going on in that dressing room at the time and the pressure he had to maybe make that move and make another run at it. But Don Sweeney, we don't know anything about, really. Yeah, we do know that. Well, we can kind of tell that Charlie Jacobs and Cam Neely want to keep it in the Bruin way. They're almost resembling Philly now.
I was going to say that. Yeah.
Although Philly's going the other way now.
Yeah, the only people good enough are ex-Bruins.
Yeah.
But now Philly's finally realized that, well, you need outside ideas because if you're only looking in the same mirror year after year after year.
Well, yeah, fair enough. I like to see who their coach is. If it's Mike Milbury, then we can just end the show. But you know,
hang on. Is that being talked about?
No, I'm just saying, like, keep it in the family because Claude Julien, you'd think, might also be available now as a coach. You don't know, but Drew, I'm not shocked by the hire. Cam Neely,
you can't be because he was the assistant GM, and
Cam Neely's got a lot of power, is he?
Right?
And
but
he played with.
I'm just saying, it's not surprising because when there's an opening, Richie, for a GM position, and the assistant GM's there, it's almost like. The first person you think could be hired is...
I thought Jeff Gordon was going to be the guy. He had worked in Boston before, but the Rangers wouldn't give permission. And you know what? They're within their rights to not give him permission, especially during the playoffs, although the GMs don't really do anything during the playoffs.
I'd say they can't let Jeff Gordon go. He's building a perennial winner here.
Well, he can't. I agree. And, you know, kind of like Jeff Blashill in Detroit, you pay more money to stick around because Gordon's done a nice job in New York. And in reality, say there isn't as hands-on as he once was.
No, he's traveling to different houses.
But that's a good point. I mean, is there not a possibility, Richie, in New York, that Glenn Sather moves a little bit out into more of a president role and Gordon becomes the GM there?
Very possible.
I think that's probably happening to some degree behind the scenes.
You hear rumblings that it is happening. But, I mean, Sather still has a role with that team, of course. I mean, he wants to add that sixth cup on his resume. But in terms of Don Sweeney, Drew, I mean, what has he done? We don't know. That doesn't mean it's a bad hire by any means. I mean, he's paid his dues. He didn't jump right into it like Shanahan. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that Shanahan didn't learn the ropes as Yzerman did or, say, Don Sweeney has in the Boston system. So I'm interested to see what it is, but... I have concerns that they're just trying to keep it in-house now. And you also wonder, is Cam Neely making the calls? That's something I think about because...
Well, that seems to be the
taking
case.
Taking a former teammate here.
Yeah. The general manager isn't what the general manager used to be in a lot of organizations. The president's now the general manager, and he sort of just insulates himself with a GM. You see it. I mean, you see it in so many different organizations. You see it in Toronto, where I mean, are you telling me Brendan Shanahan, if they finally hire a general manager, isn't calling the majority of those shots? Still, I have trouble believing.
I don't know
that.
But he wasn't even living in Toronto. It doesn't mean he can't make the calls, Drew. But I think he probably is a little more hands off than
what's
some guys.
Then what's he doing?
I mean, he's picking the guys to run the squad,
right? And then waits 3 years and sees if they work or not. Like my point is, you never really are. It's hard to really determine what the president of hockey operations is doing at this day and age in a lot of organizations when they seem to have all the power and they seem to be trumpeted as such incredible hires. That I know that they're probably the CEO and everything, but
Well, Sweeney's going to report to Cam Neely.
So, tells me that Cam Neely's got a pretty good say there, doesn't it?
It tells me that, yeah.
Yeah, and they got some work cut out for them in Boston. They got some salary cap problems. We know that that was one of the reasons why they had to trade Johnny Boychuk in the offseason. It's not as ideal of a situation in Boston as it has been in years past.
Yeah, you mentioned, I know during the season, Richie gave us a hard time because we were talking about the Boston Bruins window closing, but I think that he's got his work cut out for him, and everybody says, well, is he going to trade Chara? And, Richie mentions Claude Julien. I think that's number one. You got to let him know, mm-hmm. out of respect for Claude Julien, a guy who's been an NHL head coach for many years, is he going to be the head coach moving forward? I believe he's under contract for one more year, right, Rich?
Believe so.
So I think you got to make that decision. And, we've talked about this before. I mean, you look at the Boston Bruins, they're still a pretty young team when you consider, the core of this team is relatively young. Patrice Bergeron, is the leader of the team. And, Zdeno Chara, yeah, sure, he's gotten slower. But David Pastrnak, they just drafted him. He played really impressive. Yeah, Ryan Spooner. There's a lot of really good players on the back end. Dougie Hamilton's getting better. Torrey Krug's a good defenseman.
Well, they got to re-sign Hamilton, are they going to trade Lucic?
Yeah, they're going. Yeah, well, that's he's going to have to make those decisions. They didn't score enough this year, right? The Boston Bruins, and they weren't good enough defensively. And Tuukka Rask didn't play at the level he played 2 years ago. So he does have some work cut out for him. But I don't think you're not in a situation where you're cleaning house in Boston. Making a few moves. Richie mentioned you have a few guys to sign. Lucic makes a lot of money, Richie. Are you going to trade him? So there's decisions to make. But I think Don Sweeney, he's been the assistant general manager, I believe, for 6 years now. And again, Richie's saying, well, we don't know a lot about him. Sure, as a GM, we don't. He's worked with Peter Chiarelli. By the way, apparently they're really good friends.
He played with Peter Chiarelli at Harvard.
Yep.
And he worked with Chiarelli. He played with Neely for 8 years in Boston. So it's interesting that way.
Also, he's been with one organization.
I should qualify as Julien actually signed an extension in November. Shows you the kind of change in direction of this squad. So he signed an extension November 14. So
for 2 years?
I don't know. They never released the actual term, so you only really hear it through the insiders.
So he's under contract for at least one more year, maybe two.
3 year extension. It was apparently reported to be a 3 year extension.
Yeah, but if
November of 14.
But if they fire a coach nowadays, you get a third round pick just for.
Let me get on that for a second. Okay, so let's go back to that. Let's go to that, excuse me.
Okay.
Tom McLellan is in San Jose, and they don't want him anymore. That's okay. Don't change the players after they've never won anything. So they fired Tom McLellan. They say he's not the coach for us. And Edmonton goes and hires him because, hey, San Jose doesn't want him anymore. San Jose is paying him money to not be there. And now Edmonton hires him and pays him, I think, $5 million a year. And they have to give up a draft pick, a third-round pick to San Jose for a coach that they fired and were paying. That doesn't make any sense.
No.
That's what happens when you implement rules on the fly.
The reward for San Jose
is not paying him.
In terms of compensation from Edmonton is that they no longer have to pay for two head coaches.
And I believe, I don't know how you have to, there's a certain rule about how much money you're paying, but I believe if McLellan's making five, he's not going to get anything from San Jose, but I could be wrong on that. But the idea that you give compensation anyhow for a guy you didn't want anymore is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Like Babcock, I can understand because Babcock was a free agent for coaching on July 1. He signed when he was technically under contract with Detroit, and they're going to give him compensation for that. I understand that. But it's also, it is discretionary because the Penguins didn't ask for any compensation for the Devils firing Chiro because they were getting off the hook for all of his money, or at least a large portion of it.
Mm-hmm.
So just a bizarre rule that's brought into play. I understand the theory behind it, but they needed to flesh that one out more before implementing it.
The NHL, they always make up rules, with half-baked ideas where they don't really think them through. I think we can go to break. Let's hope.
Can we?
I think so. Let's go to break. We'll come back, hopefully, talk about Anaheim and Chicago. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Getzlaff, open Fowler, can't shoot. Getzlaff will send it off. One-timer, score! Simone Dupre to the left of Corey Crawford. it. The puck after he got it from out high. And Simone Dupre has just put Anaheim ahead 2-1 in the last minute of the second period.
There's Simone Dupre of the Anaheim Ducks scoring the game-winning goal in Game 3 versus the Chicago Blackhawks. The Ducks regain home ice advantage and now lead this series 2-1 heading into Game 4 tonight. Tonight, I should point out, which is very exciting, 7 o'clock start time as opposed to a random 10 a.m. start time or something like they were doing last week.
And the next few games, I think they're all
from 7 here on o'clock. Out, I think they're all they're all 8 Eastern, 7 Central start times. Makes a lot more sense.
Whatever NBC wants.
Yeah. But
because they pay a lot for the rights.
Anyways, Ducks up 2-1 on the Chicago Blackhawks. You know, could have been 3-0 given the way the triple overtime game ended the other game, game two, which was a terrific game. That was a fantastic hockey game.
You stayed up for it.
I stayed up for it, which is really
crazy.
Stunning news. I'm as equally shocked about it as you guys were. You know what? I really wanted to stay up for Letterman. That was my ultimate point, is I was staying up for Letterman, and then the game went on for another hour and 45 minutes afterwards. But I was awake. I saw it.
You know, that last, I know Richie still hasn't watched it, but that last Letterman was awesome. You know,
I taped it. Don't ruin it for me.
No, I haven't. I've been pretty good about that. I'm usually the idiot that ruins it for you, right? Like, if you have, like, a game taped, I'll be like, hey, Richie, did you see the game? And no,
well,
but
I got home last night, and my neighbor was asked, he said, you know, how was the game? Like, the Rangers Lightning game. I said, it was a good game. He's like, I taped it on PVR, you know, okay. I said, no problem. Yeah, it was a good game. I don't want to ruin it, of course. And then another neighbor comes up, and he's like, so the Rangers won.
I thought you were going to say our pickup hockey game yesterday where you scored a hat trick.
Oh, God.
Really? A hat trick?
Rick Ralph.
That's more goals than you're seeing in most of these NHL series.
I told Richie, one of the goals I had a perfect view for because I was just lollygagging it back. And Rich picked the corner on Rick Ralph. And let's just say that Rick wasn't too happy and there might have been a bad word. I think it was darn. He wasn't too happy, but it was lots of fun. But you know, back to the series. I mean, we're kibitzing here, but this series to me, who would have thought that there would be less goals in this series versus the Rangers Lightning series? Yeah. I know you know with two good offensive teams, but the way the goalies were playing, especially Lundqvist, you wouldn't think that series would have more goals. But Game 3, first of all, the Chicago Blackhawks were dead tired, and I know that's an excuse because the Anaheim Ducks, Richie, also were in that triple overtime game.
But how do you disperse your ice time on the back end?
Duncan Keith played 50 minutes in game number 2, okay? And I gotta make a comment here. And you know I like the Blackhawks, and I like Joel Quenneville, but what's he doing with these lineup changes? I mean, Antoine Vermette, I know that he was a healthy scratch earlier, but you're taking out Teravainen, who I think has actually been really good, and putting in Nordstrom, who only played in the first round. I think he only played one game or two games in the first round.
This is why you hear of the unrest between Bowman and Quenneville.
Richie, to me, it made no sense. And, you know, his comments were, well, you know, we haven't got these guys in a while. Well, this is the conference finals here. I mean, you play your best players. Antoine Vermette, did they not give up a first rounder for him? Or was it a second rounder?
I thought it was a second rounder. But
I mean, and you're not
Vermette? It was a first rounder.
And was it a first rounder?
Yeah.
It was a first rounder, Drew. And that's why I couldn't remember. But he's not playing. And
the defenseman, Klaus Dahlbeck.
Sorry, the player that went in actually, I made a mistake, was Versteeg, was the other guy that went in. Chris Versteeg had success earlier in the season playing with Brad Richards and Patrick Kane on that second line. They put Versteeg in there. I actually didn't think he played that bad, but to me, what's going on right now, Richie, it scares me a little bit. I picked the Chicago Blackhawks, but I'm not too confident. You look at what's happening with the defense. Quenneville's not playing Kimmo Timonen. He just hasn't been playing him all playoffs, and he's playing Duncan Keith too much. And again, I'm not an NHL head coach. I just watch these games. But watching – and Duncan Keith, by the way, I said this last week. I think he's been the best defenseman in the playoffs. I mean, this is a Norris Trophy winner. He's great. But you're playing Keith and Seabrook and Jarmelson and Oduya so much. You're barely – and Roosevelt's injured right now. And you put Kuminsky in because Rundblad didn't play well, and now they've called up Trevor Van Riemsdyk, and you might play him. Like, this isn't the time where you want to start monkeying around this much with your lines. And to me, you know, the Chicago Blackhawks won that game in triple OT, and then you're not playing Teravainen and Vermette. You're bringing in Nordstrom and Versteeg, who aren't fresh, Richie. Just to me, it kind of – like, I thought it threw them off. I just thought they played really sloppily. And this was at home. Game 3 at home, and Anaheim – it might have only been 2-1, but as soon as Anaheim got that second goal, Dupre, they just shut it right down.
Well, and that's and I want to talk about Anaheim because I agree with you. Chicago's made a lot of really odd decisions. Fine, but I think that's sort of overlooking how well Anaheim's playing defensively.
Oh, no,
and how they are absolutely just clamping down on the Chicago Blackhawks. They're keeping everything to the outside, and they really are doing a fantastic job at neutralizing some of the tremendous offensive talent that Chicago has. Now, obviously, you know, that could change tonight, and then the whole narrative changes to what we saw in Tampa Bay, New York, where it's a best of three. But I have been impressed with the Anaheim Ducks and their team defense and their defensemen as a whole, and how they've played in this series, really in the whole playoffs, of course.
Well, I mean, you know, they're talented back end, Drew.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they have good skill sets, and they complement each other quite well. So, you know, I still think on paper that Chicago's D is better. I mean, top four for sure. Obviously, bottom two, no. Like, they're not. But it shouldn't be too much. I mean, we've talked on the show at length about Hampus Lindholm and the talent that he has, and I really do like Cam Fowler. I think he's a really good player. He has flashes of, you know, moments, but all players do. And then, you know, Sami Vatanen. And obviously, Dupre has been a real nice addition for them. But it's also even, you know, guys like Clayton Stoner. There's veterans like Beauchemin. It's a nice mix that they have. They don't have your classic top guy, but they're playing real well. Now, at the same time, saying all this, Frederik Andersen's seeing the puck real nice right now.
Mm-hmm.
Playing with a lot of confidence. But I do agree with you what you just said before, Drew, that Chicago could get a couple. You get Kane and Taves going here. And then, you're right back at two-all. Who has a momentum if anybody does at all? I don't think this series is over by any means. I mean, you said on the top, you know, it could be 3-0. Sure, it could be 2-1 the other way.
Yeah. Frederik Andersen's been awesome. Richie, you're right. But if Chicago doesn't figure out that third pairing, and, you know, we hear Trevor Van Riemsdyk might go in.
I don't mind that, by the way. I don't mind that.
I think they've been waiting for him to get healthy. So, I mean, I think that's who they would ideally like
either.
In there.
I don't mind it either in the sense that, I mean, I thought Kyle Komiski can skate, but he was in the Swedish Elite League the last 2 years. I think, to me, it's just you need to have some stability there. Like, you need to have a guy, at least a player that's in the lineup two games in a row, Rich. Like, you've had Roosevelt and Komiski and Rundblad. And you're right. To me, you know, they're still the most talented team in the NHL. But that depth, and I know, you know, Richie mentioned Clayton Stoner, a physical guy. Sometimes he takes too many penalties. But when you have, you know, a situation where you don't have to play your defenseman 26, 28 minutes a game. And
especially after triple overtime.
Exactly.
That's why, especially.
You have Sami Vatanen on your third pair. Sami Vatanen might be a top pairing defenseman on weaker teams.
Well, he doesn't play well enough defensively to be the top pairing
guy.
But
I'm just saying, I mean, they are stronger on that third pair. Sami Vatanen and Cam Fowler is stronger than who Chicago's rolling out right now.
Vatanen and Stoner usually is what it is, right?
Sorry, what did I say?
Dupre and Fowler. Yeah.
Or sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. But
and if Fowler was with.
But to your point about time on ice for the Anaheim defense, the least amount of minutes on the defense in game three was Stoner with 14 minutes and 46 seconds. And then the most was Dupre, who they got from Pittsburgh at the trade deadline. And sort of just.
For Lovejoy?
Yeah, for Lovejoy. Great trade for Anaheim right now. 23-26. So when you're playing all six of your defensemen somewhere between, you know, let's say 15 minutes and 23 minutes. You're really able to wear down the opposition.
A big deal, Drew. If Duncan Keith, as he talks about 50 minutes, if Duncan Keith's playing 25, 26, that's what he's used to. These horses doesn't matter,
right?
But when you're playing three overtimes, that's when it becomes a factor. The game after, I think. Now, I don't think it necessarily will be a factor today or tonight.
I think the lingering effects of playing, you know, 50 minutes of hockey, a day off, 28 minutes of hockey. I don't think that just another day off lets you bounce back that quickly. I think that the lingering effects of that marathon game two are going to affect the Blackhawks a lot more than the Ducks because of how much they rely on their top four defensemen.
I think it won't as much as it was in game three. I think it'll still impact them. But again, Drew, they gotta play Kimmo Timonen a little bit more, and they have, but I mean, they've played him 5 minutes some games.
He played 6.5 minutes in game three.
There you go. He's got to play more, and I realize he's older, and he didn't play most of the year with Philly, but he's just got to play more. It's pretty simple.
I don't think he's going to. I mean, I agree with you, Ezzy. I don't disagree with you that he should play more, or, I mean, they're asking for trouble, but if Joel Quenneville says to himself, look, we're down two games to one,
I can't trust this guy on the ice. And he couldn't trust him on the ice in game three, obviously. And he really couldn't trust him in game two. He hasn't really been able to trust him in the entire playoffs.
But you give him a few offensive zone draws and some against the Anaheim's third, fourth lines. Yep. Like, you should be able to trust him in those situations.
Especially at home ice where you can get the matchups you want.
That's what I mean, yeah.
But he didn't in game three. So what makes you think that he's going to do it in game four?
That's a good question.
I don't believe he's going to. I think he's said, you know, this guy just isn't going to be able to cut it. And if we play him 10, 11, 12 minutes, which isn't a significant number of minutes, Joel Quenneville obviously feels it's going to negatively affect their team's chances of winning the series and winning the game.
The reason why they need to, and it's not because just because he hasn't been playing a lot, it's because they need him because Duncan Keith is going up against the Getzlaf-Perry line. Like, Richie, at this point of the season, that's when you start to see how important depth is. When the Anaheim Ducks right now, you mentioned, Drew, how well they're playing defensively. They're playing pretty well offensively. Like, you have – it's not just Getzlaf,
no,
Perry,
for sure.
And Kessler. I mean, Silverberg is having a breakout playoffs.
Sure.
Cogliano, really speedy guy. He's been great. Emerson Edom on the fourth line. He's been good. I mean, like, Bolesky's
Yuri
been Sekash very good.
Yuri Sekash is effective.
Now he's played a couple games. I mean, and you're only – you're essentially using five defensemen, right? So, like, that's why I don't disagree
it's
with
also
you, Drew.
Because Anaheim's physical as you, too, right? So it makes them more difficult.
They're a punishing team. Yeah. So you're only playing. And hey, it's possible, Drew, that tonight Kimmo Timonen plays 7 minutes, which wouldn't be that big of a difference, or he plays 6 minutes. But to me, the Ducks are going to win this series if it keeps up like that. They're outplaying the Chicago Blackhawks. Like you said, they could be up. You know, they could have won.
I mean, they were the better team in overtime in game two.
Yep.
How many posts did they hit? Three? Four?
Yep. They could be up 3-0 right now.
They could be up 3-0. And, I mean, I know that – I believe that it should go – you know, logically, you think it's going to go long.
Remember
also.
How many posts they hit? Getzlaf hit the post?
Yeah, that's what I just said. Logically, you think this is going to go be a long series because these are two very good teams. But the way Anaheim's playing right now and the problems that
Chicago
is having
loses
on the back
tonight,
end,
it's over.
It could be over early.
Yeah, they got to win tonight.
Well, I think good teams, when you push them, change the level of play.
Yeah. And that's been history. You know, we saw that. We saw Chicago get down 3-1 to Detroit a couple years ago, and they bounced back and they won that series. And we saw Chicago get down to St. Louis last year, and they came back and they won that series. So, I mean, they certainly do push come to shove, tend to respond. I'm curious to see if they have enough left in the tank to respond in this series because they're playing a damn good team.
They've also played a lot of hockey the last 2 years.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even this year with all those the overtimes against Nashville, they have how many? Three overtimes against
Nashville? Yeah, there was a triple overtime game there. Yeah, I mean, they've played more hockey. Yeah. Think about the Duck. I mean, the second round for both was easy. 4 games for Chicago, 5 games for Anaheim.
Yeah.
But, you know, at some point in time.
They had a lot of time off, so.
Yeah.
I still think they're going to push back.
We'll find out tonight. Game time, 7 o'clock this evening. Let's head to break. When we come back, the Edmonton Oilers have a new head coach. We'll talk about Todd McClellan after these messages. You're listening to an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. 20 minutes past the top of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. The man on my left is Richard Pollock. The man in between us is Ezra Ginsberg.
And Richie's on my left.
I know. He's on both of our left.
Okay.
Yeah. This segment brought to you by Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, the official realtor of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100. Of course. Happy birthday, Frank Zappia, yesterday.
Yeah, it was Frank's birthday yesterday. I've yet to meet Frank. You've met Frank, but it was his birthday, so we all wish him a happy birthday. And
is Drew hoarding Frank?
I can arrange a meeting. I can arrange a lunch.
Go for a couple cold ones.
Okay, we can do that
too. Sandwich, a cold one.
Yeah, sandwiches. You know, it can be a lunch that gets goes right into cocktail hour if you like.
We got to hit a patio though.
Okay,
because it's really nice.
Weather,
we got to
hit
a patio.
I agree with you there. Yeah. No argument whatsoever. Anyways, welcome back to the program. We head out to Edmonton where we're going to talk about the Oilers hiring a new head coach in former San Jose Sharks head coach Todd McClellan. Is this, you know, obviously I think we agree, you know, Peter Chiarelli, that's a good hire. You know, bringing in Bob Nicholson to be in charge of the organization, that's a good hire.
That's most important.
Yeah. Falling ass backwards into Connor McDavid, that's a good play.
Oh, God.
I know. A little nauseating, but.
It's not a little nauseating.
Is McClellan the right coach here? Is this the guy that you think is the right guy for the job in Edmonton?
I really like the hire. I've always been a fan of Todd McClellan. We talked about this last week from Saskatchewan. the second greatest province after Manitoba. No, but Todd McClellan, you hear Richie.
When are you running for mayor?
I was going to say, how official are these province rankings you're coming up
with? My grandmother's from Saskatchewan. That's why I like Saskatchewan.
Okay, I'll grant you that.
Ryan, Saskatchewan.
You drink Ryan, Saskatchewan?
Todd McClellan, you always hear, Richie, that Todd McClellan, like, he's a player's coach. You always hear that players liked him. What happened in San Jose the last year, I don't think, changes that. I think Joe Thornton has, I mean, we all know what's going on in San Jose. Joe Thornton, it seems like Joe Thornton's running everybody out of town, right? Mm-hmm. But Todd McClellan, Todd McClellan, hey, he did a pretty good job with Canada at the World Championships, did he? And sure, you could say, well, he had Sidney Crosby, Claude Giroux. I'm just saying,
did you see those lines?
I know.
Did you see the lines of the other
teams? You had Tyler Toffoli on your fourth line. But I like McClellan, and I think year after year he had San Jose in the playoffs, even though they didn't go far. You know, that would be the one knock against him, Richie, that he didn't take those teams very far. But I still think he's a good coach, and I like the hire. The Edmonton Oilers right now, and, you know, they have to make some moves. They have to address the goaltending situation, Richie, but it's a young team. And, you know, you talk about Mike Babcock getting $50 million, but I think Todd McClellan wins the lottery here. He gets to coach Connor McDavid.
He does, but I think the contract was 3 years, $15 million. Is that what it was? That was the
sounds something familiar.
Rumor.
I don't remember exactly what it is.
You never know these coaches.
It's a five-year deal.
Five years, 15, I think it was.
Young team needs a veteran coach, Richie.
$3 million a year?
Yeah, I believe it's 5 years, 15.
Okay.
They need a coach who's been there before, as I agree. His job in San Jose, I think one aspect we have to take into account, bringing along guys like Joe Pavelski, bringing along guys like Logan Couture.
Matt Nieto, Hurdle.
Yeah, Hurdle, Matt Nieto. I mean, they regressed a bit last year. But yeah, I agree with you in terms of that. And that's a factor for sure. I think you saw Todd McClellan at the end of his reign in San Jose, both the year prior to this past one, and this past one, basically saying, like, you guys going to do it or not? Like, I can't do anything different anymore. It's on you guys. And I don't even mind that approach, to be honest. I mean, maybe you say he's kind of taking the blame off his shoulders. I don't see it that way. I thought his interviews during the 3-0 blown lead to L.A. in that series were really telling. Like, he didn't think he had the leaders on that team. He was trying to put the pressure on their shoulders and make them change, and they weren't changing. But I think he manages personalities well. He's a bit of a politician. I think he does that job pretty well. He's coached in the AHL. He's coached assistant. He's paid his dues. He's spent a long time in different environments. He's getting a gift of young talent. Obviously, you mentioned they need about 3D, and they need a goaltender for sure. But there's a lot of other teams that have more needs. And if you have Connor McDavid and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and Leon Draisaitl up the middle for the next 10, 15, 20 years, whatever they do with that, you know, because obviously Jordan Staal, a guy like that gets traded, then you don't have to worry about the middle. And on the wings, you had Eberle and Hall and Jakob. It's an embarrassment of riches there, really. So I think it's a good hire. He's he's from, as he mentions, the Saskatchewan factor. But again, you know, he's familiar with the area, and it's a good hire for me. I have absolutely no issue with it.
You mentioned the leadership issue and that there were leadership issues in the San Jose dressing room. One of the knocks on the Edmonton dressing room over the last number of years is that there's been a leadership void there as well.
That's true.
Right. It seems fairly apparent that that's true.
You've heard that from
everybody. Well, you know, Andrew Ferentz is a guy coming from Boston, yeah, right? And that was a veteran team, mm-hmm, and that he's the captain. And, you know, Andrew Ferentz at this point in his career is a bottom pairing defenseman on a good team. And you know, there's been so much movement there, Rich. You've had so many players coming and going, and to me,
maybe,
you know,
has he?
I think it's a function of that more so than, again, like, you look at.
I've heard that very cliquey dressing room. If you talk to people off the record, Hall, the Hall's not regarded particularly well by a lot of people, attitude wise. And I think everything's going to change with Connor McDavid, because he's going to be the best player in the world in 5 years, probably.
Right. So Connor McDavid gets drafted.
Might be less than that.
Yeah. Connor McDavid gets drafted, and he goes into that dressing room, which has got this leadership void already. It's not really fair to ask an 18-year-old to come in,
that's right,
and be the leader of the team.
Crosby
had Lemieux. Yeah. There was a buffer there. Yeah. Can McClellan come in and be the leader of that team?
I mean, like Paul Maurice? Yeah.
Like Paul Maurice here in Winnipeg.
Yeah,
exactly.
Maybe. True. I think that's a factor, although you look at... I think it's easier to do that in Edmonton than it was in San Jose, because you didn't have Marlowe and Thornton entrenched there in roles. So I do think that's a factor for sure. That doesn't mean they don't need defensemen, but also veteran players. Sign a few veteran guys who've won before, just been in the league for a while, and I think that'll be a fact. Guys that he can lean on, like, he needs to be able to lean on the veterans in a different way than he leans on the youngsters. So I don't think he can do it on his own. He needs some help, but I think he can play that leadership role in a way.
Because, I mean, there's guys in that dressing room, certainly. Some of the younger forwards have been around for a number of years now. But they're not, I mean...
They've learned to do it the wrong way, you've
That's
heard.
Right. So you have to try, and you're trying to change...
You watch that team in Winnipeg, Drew, and they came through town. And, like, these guys aren't back-checking. They're not sticking up for each other. I mean, it was a joke.
Right.
There's work to do.
Well, there's a reason why, you know, they've been called a junior team, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the Edmonton Oilers, and, you know... There's been a leadership problem. What I was trying to do is kind of take it. I really like Andrew Ferentz. I think Andrew Ferentz is a guy that has been a good defenseman for a really long time. I think Rich's point is really when you talk about Taylor Hall, Jordan Eberle, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Neil Yakupov, those guys are still, even though they've been in the NHL now for a couple of years, well, when you're talking Taylor Hall, 5 years now, they're really young, and they're not necessarily natural leader types, Rich.
Well, and they've learned,
and that's what's kind of happened. And you've got you're young on defense too. You've got Justin Schultz there, and it's just that team. I think this year is going to be a very interesting year to see how quickly they develop. Because when you throw Connor McDavid in there with Hall and Eberle, I mean he could. Would we be surprised if he scores 40 goals? He's that good. And we've watched him, and you hear what scouts have been raving about him for 3 years now.
Yeah.
I mean, this team could be really good. And what happens? Like, is Taylor Hall, is he going to become the captain? As Richie said, is Connor McDavid going to become the captain? Like, because it's interesting. Right now, Taylor Hall's an assistant captain.
I think they go captainless this year.
There's nobody who deserves to be the captain there. I mean, none of those guys have proven that they can be the leader in that dressing room.
I just think there's Eddie's point. You know, like, I don't think it can be Hall just because of what you've heard. I don't think it can be McDavid because he's too young. I don't think the defensemen are good enough to be.
I think
the
if
captains.
It's not Ferentz, it's Eberle.
I just don't think any of them really need to have it.
Regardless of who has where's the
don't
C, Rich,
force somebody into the.
Regardless of who has the C, and you know, speaking of Todd McClellan, I think he is the guy. We talked about San Jose and all the young players they've had over the years, Logan Couture, and you know, Nieto, Hurdle, and all these guys.
Edward Vlasic on the back end too.
They need someone like him, and I actually thought Todd Nelson did a really good job there.
I was going to say, you know, like some of the credit, because when I'm talking about the Edmonton Oilers, I'm talking about the Oilers under Dallas Eakins here. They didn't, you know.
Oh yeah, you're right Nelson. Though. When they were
came
a mess.
Through after and they were
a mess. Yeah. I mean, the Oilers took a big step back last year, and now they're going to take a big step forward. But it's not like the Toronto Maple Leafs. The Toronto Maple Leafs we expected to kind of be a decent team last year. I don't think. I had any expectations the Oilers would be good. I thought they'd take a step forward. But, that leadership core, the young core, not including Connor McDavid, they have to mature as a group.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we head out to Buffalo. They're a team in search of a head coach. They thought they had one by the name of Babcock. We'll talk to Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News about it. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.